well, this is Carol Jurgensen Sheets. Hey, I am here talking to you about sex addiction, and this is the place where you can get sex help with Carol the coach. And it's very, very difficult to know what to do. So this is the show that gives you the information that you so badly need. If you are wondering if you have a sexual addiction, or you're the partner or a spouse of somebody that you suspect may have this problem, or perhaps you absolutely know, but let's face it, there's not enough information out there to make it an easy thing to get the resources you need. You may be somebody that has to hear about it. Books are not your thing. And so this show is primarily designated just for you so that you will know how to identify, what to do, and where to turn if you or somebody you love has a sexual addiction. Now, I'm a person who really believes that you can go to lots of different sites to find out information. And I highly advocate my own site.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email in question. My girlfriend and I listen to you on the radio, and she respects your opinion as I do. So here's the question. I've been separated for 9 months. I'm working on a divorce. Is it okay to date? I believe it is. But she's not comfortable with being around people who know my divorce is not final. Can you help? He kind of answered it when he said, if she's not comfortable, it's not a good gig. And Pat, you have some questions about dating?
I am 58 years old, and I've been divorced for years. I was watching the Oprah show the other day, and they were talking about...
They were talking about sexual desire.
How does that factor in if you're after menopause?
Obviously, being postmenopausal, you know, you aren't going to have the same pheromones, but then the men you're probably going to be dating, they're not going to have that need to mate with you, for children. How do you feel about hooking up with somebody else?
To bring Carol to your station, call John Quick at 317-432-0309. Available.
All right. Well, you know what? That is an interesting intro. Somebody added an intro for me, and I do believe they got the wrong one. So let me just tell you a little bit about what we're doing tonight. This is Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and I'm here to answer any of your questions about sexuality. You know me. I oftentimes will interview experts in the field, you know, people who absolutely have lived this addiction and have found help through 12-step groups, through specialized therapy, through incredible books, and through Skype. And then I also help people who love somebody that they suspect has a sexual addiction. And that's important, too, because, you know, as I was saying before the intro started, there aren't a lot of places that you can go and get information where you can actually hear stuff. Yeah, there's plenty of excellent books, and I highly recommend them. But if you're somebody who likes to listen to information, this is the show for you. And you can access this through iTunes. You can absolutely download every show we have done by going to Sex Addiction with Carol the Coach on iTunes and then subscribing for free. These podcasts are available for your download on the computer, on your iPod. So take advantage of that. You know, find out what the experts are saying. And I'm real excited because tonight we have a woman who has a very interesting story. She was a former spouse of a sex addict, as well as she was an addictions therapist. And although at the time she didn't know much about sexual addiction, she certainly learned after she discovered that her husband had the disease or the disorder of sexual addiction. So she's going to be talking about the fact that there are no barriers to this addiction. You know, there's not educational or social or economic barriers, and that this could happen to anybody at any time, and it is becoming more and more rampant, in part because of the affordability. A lot of ways that people act out sexually, they're free. Anonymity, you know, you can get on the internet and do about anything you want and not necessarily be discovered. And then besides the affordability and the anonymity, it's also about accessibility. You can get on any page. You can go to thousands and thousands and thousands of websites. So affordability, anonymity, and accessibility are the three A's that play into sexual addiction. And this woman learned the hard way. And as a lot of partners do, and if you have a sexual addiction, you know that as a partner of a spouse, you probably in some way, you've blamed the spouse for your own sexual addiction. Maybe they weren't sexual enough. Maybe they were too interested in other things. Maybe they complained too much. Maybe there was too much stress. They spent too much money. So tonight we're going to be hearing Shireen talk about what did she do in her own life? How was she duped? How did she spend the next 5 years going through the ups and downs? And the last year of her marriage, how did she discover the right resources to actually turn this situation down around for herself? And believe it or not, she became a sexual addictions therapist, in part to help spouses because there wasn't enough available help for her, but also because she wanted to help couples. And so she's going to be talking about resources that she's developed and how she turned her devastation into her life's purpose. A very interesting woman. I went through the CSAT experience with her. For many of you that don't know, CSAT means that we are certified sexual addictions therapists. And she's living her life out by creating a purpose that is helping many, many people. And so you feel free to give us a call. Now, if you've got a pencil and paper there, I want you to write down the number, 646-595-3284. Yes, that is the number to call if you end up having a question for Shireen. And again, that number is 646-595-3284. We are just super excited because clearly we've got some of the most renowned experts in the world that are booked for the show. We've got great books that you can read. I don't know if anybody heard the interview last week on what is a love addict and how is that different from a sex addict, especially if it is played out sexually. And we've got a wonderful questionnaire and resource workbook coming up for you in a couple of weeks from the Impulse Center. They're going to be talking about how do you know if you're a sexual addict and what do you do about that. Got Stephanie Carnes, who is going to be booked for in the fall. Everybody has heard of Stephanie Carnes. We really look forward to working with her. And so just stay tuned. Make sure to get all these shows downloaded, and don't hesitate to give me either a call at 317-218-3479 if you want a referral, or go to what I consider to be one of the best websites, and that is www.sexhelp.com. That gives you a list of people that may be in your area who are trained and certified to do this kind of work. And then again, go to my website. I have two of them, actually. One is www.sexhelp with Carol, the coach, and the other is my own personal psychotherapy and life coaching website that gives you hundreds of articles in general on how to make your life better, what you can do to improve your life. And I found it so fascinating that at the end of our training, we actually got to find out how do we take people to the next level when they've worked really hard on recovering from sexual addiction. I know I was talking with a man who had 27 years of sobriety, and he was also a therapist, and he said, Carol, it's rare to find anybody who has over a decade of recovery. One, because all of you know that you are you're pioneers in this field. This is an up-and-coming field, and there aren't a lot of resources, and that's why we have to do our absolute best to really work hard at following all the resources that are available to us right now. And soon, in 50 years, we're going to be working with people who have 25 years recovery. This whole experience of 12-step work and sexual addiction got started late 70s, early 80s. And so it's a pretty brand new field. If you're suffering, just know that you're not alone and that there are resources out there for you. And don't get discouraged. If you work a program, if you follow the 12 steps, perhaps you do Recovery Nation, which is not the 12 steps, but it's a whole nother recovery program, and you have a trained, certified sexual addictions therapist, you know, you will get better. If you work it, it really works. So I can't emphasize enough that there is help for you. Well, I want to welcome Shireen to the show. Shireen, thank you for being so generous to share your time, your expertise, and your resources with us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Carol. Thank you.
Yes. So you're a former spouse of a sex addict as well as a sexual addictions therapist. And can you begin to share your story of how this unfolded for you?
Well, I was married 20 years, in the relationship 21. And I think the unfolding of it, you know, I mean, knowing what we know now after the fact, you can look back and see several different things. But mostly it was just difficulties in the relationship. And, you know, I would try to work things out. We would go to marriage counseling and retreats and things like that and get close for a little while. And then there would be that isolation that would set in again. And I was always looking, being a therapist, because I've been a therapist for many years and then added the sex addiction therapy onto it later. Being a therapist, I was always trying to figure out what was wrong, you know, what the problem was. And I was reading a book, Gary Zukav's book, and I think it's called Soulmates or Soul Stories or something like that. And there was different scenarios, and there came to one chapter, and what he was describing just was really ringing bells with me as far as my ex-husband's behaviors. And he was in therapy at the time. Had a very traumatic childhood, so it was always I was always thinking, well, it's because of that, you know. And so I just, you know, brought the book to him, and I asked him to read that chapter, and he read it, and I said, what do you think? And he says, I guess I have, he said, another addiction, because when I had met him, he had been a recovering alcoholic and was in recovery the whole time we were married. So he says, I guess I have another addiction. So it struck, you know, struck true with him. But that was about 5 years. We still were together 5 years after that. Just kind of going through what you go through, you know. I had a lot of training in a lot of different areas. I knew nothing about sex addiction and just didn't know how to read the signs or really how to deal with, you know, the whole situation.
Well, I bet. And certainly for him to acknowledge that he might have another addiction, at least that broke through the denial that you may have faced, that you you knew you were on target, and yet you really didn't know what to do next.
Well, you know, I thought, I said, okay, you're in therapy. Take the book with you. Share it with your therapist. You know, I was thinking, like so many do, that this was something that could be handled in therapy and not realizing how specialized the field is. Even though I'm an addiction specialist, it was mostly drugs, alcohol, eating disorders, things like that. I'd never delved into that area. I'd never have had anyone come to me with a sex addiction problem. So I was uneducated around it. So I thought, you know, it could be handled with the therapist he was going with, and just kind of left him to do that, you know. And it just, you know, didn't get better. I, at that time, had no idea the extent of his problem, you know. There were just certain little things, behaviors that I had found, but I had no idea how large it was.
And so what were some of those behaviors that had clued you into, he's definitely got a problem? It may have to do with his childhood, but he's definitely got a problem.
Uncommunicative, real difficult time with intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a roller coaster, you know. So we would, you know, I'd bring things out to the surface. We'd go to therapy. He'd open up in that environment. Some things would come out. We'd get closer, and it usually lasted about 2 weeks, and then it would get back into the pulling away, you know. He always worked nights, you know, and I worked days. It's like he found ways to not have to fully be present in the relationship. The surface type of things were really good, you know. We raised kids together and, you know, involved with other families, all that kind of stuff. So really I thought it was more a pornography addiction. You know, I found pretty graphic, pornographic magazines and things. And you know, I told him he's really upset me and try to understand why he needed to have them. And, you know, he says, it's just a man thing, and then I won't bring them around. But they'd be hidden in places, you know. And so over the years, there were things added on top of that, always related to pornography, you know, 900 number calls and just different things. But really, that was just scratching the surface. Those were just the things that I was aware of, and I put the pieces together to figure that that was, you know, contributing to the problems we had in our relationship and in our marriage. But there was much, much more going on.
Well, I bet. And so here you were. You found the sexual conduct issues that made you feel uncomfortable, and that was fairly early on in the marriage?
Well, you know, a week before our wedding, he was a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And a week before our wedding, I got a letter in the mail with a pair of lace panties. And it was anonymous. It was an anonymous letter written by a woman, you know, just saying things like, oh, you know, you think you're getting married, but you're never going to know. He wants you for family, and he wants me for sex. And it was just crazy. So, of course, I was upset, and I showed it to my husband, and he says, I don't know who this is. I have no idea, you know, and he was always able to come up with plausible stories. He says, I'm a police officer. When, you know, John got married last year, the same thing happened to him. You know, apparently, you know, you arrest people, you know, people have grudges, or, you know. And I thought, well, you know, I mean, it was kind of plausible. you know?
Yeah, and you wanted to believe him. You didn't want to think that your soon-to-be newlywed husband was actually cheating on you and having a sexual relationship with somebody. So you were angry, but then you let that dissipate in hopes that his reasons were plausible and you continued to give him another chance.
Well, you know, I wasn't even angry, you know. People respond to things in different ways, and my way of responding to things, you know, is to be hurt or try to understand, you know. So I've never been able to get that release through anger, you know.
Okay.
It's just kind of, you know, growing up as the peacemaker in the family and everything, that's always been kind of the role that I had. But so it wasn't that I was angry. I guess it would be partially anger, but we never had anger between us, like shouting or arguing or anything like that. But it was more I was hurt and I wanted to understand and I wanted to know the truth. You know, I wanted to know, is this true, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so when I would find things, I would always confront him with them. I would not in an angry way, but just sort of like, why I found this, you know, tell me why you're doing this, or, you know, what. I would try to talk to him about it.
Well, it sounds like there were layers. I mean, it started out even before you got married, but this started accumulating, and you had more and more reason to be concerned as the history of your marriage continued.
Yes, yes.
I mean, eventually you got angry, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there towards the end. When I, you know, he went through treatment and he did a full disclosure. And after I got over the shock of everything, yeah, definitely I felt very angry, very betrayed.
Well, good, because I know that you truly believe that connection to your feelings is one of the first real, authentic steps in getting healthy.
And
I always tell clients that it's so important to be angry. I mean, I heard you say that you're being the peacemaker in your family, it was important for you to try to understand. And then did you say to be heard or hurt?
No, I said I would feel hurt. Yeah, I would feel hurt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was anger turned inward.
Yeah,
you know,
which
you know, is a very common thing for the spouse partner.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and you know, that keeps you immobilized in some ways. That you don't take action if you're hurt. But if you're angry, then you can say, okay, I'm going to take charge of my life. I'm not going to put up with this. Or, you know, I'm going to get my own treatment and I'm going to detach with love. And so was there any treatment available for you? I mean, obviously he went to the treatment center.
Yeah. You know, that was one of the major reasons that I decided at first, you know, going through all of this, I had no interest whatsoever in adding this to my practice, you know. It's like I wanted to be as far away from the subject as I could be because I was traumatized by it. But after I, you know, went through my healing and my process and more understanding, I wanted to be part of the solution because I remembered how it felt. There was nobody. I live in a very large county, and there was only one person that was trained in this field. His treatment, he had to go, like 90 miles, you know, mm-hmm. to go to treatment. I went to a support group on Saturdays there, so I had to drive that far to go to a one-hour group and come back. I mean, there was just, and nobody really understood, you know. I think I still come across that thinking that, well, you know, boys will be boys, and everybody has an affair now and then, and they just don't realize it's a little more than that, or a lot more than that, you know. There's still a lack of acceptance that this is a problem.
And certainly that's probably one of the most frustrating things for both of us as therapists is that people don't understand how insidious this is and that
mm-hmm.
it's very difficult to stop. You really need a variety of resources. And then for the partner, he or she needs a variety of resources. I'm wondering, in your group that you were a part of, were there any men in that group? that were also spouses of sex addicts?
No, no. The only group that was available, the one up at the treatment center, there was, it was just women in that one.
Okay.
And then I went to an, what's it called, Essanon group, and that was 75 miles away. I tried going to that, and it was all women in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much the only resources. But I have, in my practice, I have worked with men that who are the spouse partners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this is becoming more and more of a problem for women as well as
right.
for gay couples. Now, let me ask you, you said you were together 21 years, married 20?
Yes.
How many hospitalizations and subsequent treatments did your partner experience before you two divorced?
Well, none of this came out until it was, I didn't even identify it until 15 years into the marriage.
Okay.
So we went 15 years, which seems hard to imagine. Even for me, it seems hard to imagine. But there were, you know, like you said, there are layers. I mean, we had kids still in school, and, you know, it was just like I went through all the things that the partners go through of trying to detach, trying to create your own life, trying to, you know, when you feel like you can't do anything about a situation, then you just kind of make your choices within that. So it didn't really come out what the real problem was for 15 years. So all those times we went to therapy and we went to marriage retreat weekends and things like that, nothing ever came out about that. And so we never had an opportunity to try to work on it. When it did come out, it was another 5 years or 4 years, you know, where he was making promises. He was going to go to groups and he was going to, you know, work on it. And he would just get these jobs that took him away. And he always had a reason why he hadn't done it, you know. And I think that the catalyst for everything was when our youngest graduated from college. Because I think I was kind of holding on going, okay, you know, I want our son to have both parents at his graduation, but something's got to change, you know. And so when he graduated from college and he was out on his own, then it was like, okay, you know, we need to do something about this. And so I was looking on the internet and I found SRI in Beverly Hills, and I got on there and I started taking the questionnaires and everything, and that's when my eyes really became opened, you know. And so I just presented him with the information, and I had talked to an intake person. And so I told him, I says, I don't want you to make me responsible. It's your decision. But we can't continue if you don't get some help, you know. So you have to decide if you're going to try to get better or not, you know. It's your decision. And so he decided to call. He made the call.
And again, SRI is a treatment center in Beverly Hills. It stands for, I think, Sexual Recovery Institute.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And very, very excellent recovery
mm-hmm.
center. Although sometimes people need one, two, or even three hospitalizations before they get it. But he made the call, and then what happened?
Well, he went to a 2-week intensive program. And that's where I went to the groups on Saturdays. That's where the disclosure was made. A lot of things came out in that program that he had shelved regarding his childhood and trauma and things. And so one of the difficulties was we lived so far away from the resources. And like I said, there wasn't anyone really in our area that was certified or had this specialized training. So he ended up coming back. I was really caught because being a therapist, I almost felt, judged, you know, like, don't be his therapist, you can't help him. So things I would have maybe tried to help him with as his wife, I didn't feel like I was supposed to do anything at all. He came back and was given a page of 75 psychiatrists and psychotherapists in the county and told to pick one, you know, and it was, like, really overwhelming for him. He ended up checking himself into a psychiatric hospital a week after he got out of treatment.
And he did that because?
Well, I think that he was just feeling overwhelmed, and he just wanted to escape the reality of it. He was really broken down. You know what I mean? Emotionally broken down. Mm-hmm. And I think that he just didn't know what to do, and it was just a bit of a reprieve, you know. It's kind of like when someone goes into treatment for drugs or alcohol, and they're in for 30 days, and they start really feeling inspired that they're going to really work on the problem and everything. But it's kind of scary when you come out and you get back in the community and you're back at home, and, you know, you don't have all those people understanding what it is that you need or you're going through. So I think it was just scary for him. I think that he had a little bit of a breakdown.
Well, I can imagine so. So then he goes into a second treatment, psychiatric treatment, and then comes out. And then what transpired?
Well, then he started in therapy with a therapist here in the county. The therapist had not had training in sex addiction, but said, oh, I've worked quite often with people with this problem. And it didn't help him at all. Some of the things that transpired, as it turned out, from my point of view, were very destructive for him.
Can you give me one example so that our listeners can hear how sometimes therapy can go awry?
Yeah, I can. You know, he was going to counseling and supposedly going to groups, but all these things were occurring when I was home, so he was still avoiding me. He wasn't working on the relationship or the communication or anything. I began to suspect that he really wasn't in recovery, you know, because I was seeing the same behaviors that I'd seen before. And so I had a calendar with a black leather cover, and he had a journal with a black leather cover. And I guess they had given him this journal in treatment. I don't know where he got it, but I came out one morning, early in the morning, and saw this on the table and thought it was my calendar. I opened it up. I saw it was his journal, and I read it. I wanted to see, what is he thinking, you know? The only thing that was in there weren't any of his thoughts or anything. It just said, the only reason that Shireen has stayed with me all these years is because she needs someone to fix. So I was just... Now, here's where I got angry, right? I was really angry about that, because it kind of nullified all of my compassion or commitment that I had been showing, you know, to try to stick it out and see if we could make things work and keep everything together, you know. It was kind of like, well, if I hadn't have married him, I'd have just married someone else I needed to fix, so, you know. So I told him, you know, I said, I did a really, you know, not nice thing. You left your journal out, and I read it, and I said, here's what I found. I said, is this really how you feel? And he said, well, yeah. He says, why else would you stay with me? And I said, well, you know, I mean, we're Catholic. We were married in the church, you know. I said, well, I love you, and we made vows and commitments, and, you know, I kept telling myself if you had cancer, I wouldn't leave you. So, you know, it's not, you have an illness. I said, I truly believe that. I said, so where does that all fit in then, you know? I said, why would you think something like that? And he said, well, that's what my therapist told me. And I said, your therapist told you that? He'd never even met me, his therapist, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, yes. And I said, what did he say? And he said, he told me that the only reason that I stayed with you was because you were probably sick, because why would any woman stay with someone who had so violated their marriage vows?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And I looked at him and I said, that is really sad. I said, do you understand what your therapist is telling you? He's telling you you're not worth it. He's telling you the marriage isn't worth it. You're not worth it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I said, I think that's a terrible thing that he did.
Well, and boy, that has so many meanings. I mean, obviously, you're right. It's telling him he's not worth it, which then reaffirms that he should act out, as well as,
right.
You know, he's also, the therapist was also putting the blame on you.
Right,
in some
yeah.
way.
He was making me the sick one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although certainly, obviously, with spouses,
right.
oftentimes it is what the partner does. I mean, not you being the partner, but the sexual addict, that's what they do, is they want to continue to put the blame on the partner.
Well, and the partner receives a lot of blame.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
it sounds like you really got double whammy because of your profession.
I did, yeah,
yeah,
I did.
Okay, so then what helped you heal? I mean, obviously, I would assume that your healing didn't occur until after the marriage ended. You were so entangled.
Right. Well, and, you know, we tell people don't make any big decisions for at least 6 months, you know. So, you know, I thought we were trying to, I was trying to give him the time to do that, and I was trying to get my own therapy and things. But what happened is that I just confronted him because he was like obviously not doing what he said he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him I don't see a person in recovery, you know. And so I think that he had relapsed, and the easy thing for him to do was just to leave. He walked out on the marriage, and he moved back to his home state, back in with his parents, and just kind of walked out on everything. And so I had a very quick dose of, you know, devastation and anger, like, you know, if anybody's walking out, it should be me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did, I've always had a strong spiritual foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taught yoga for many years, and I'd always had this desire to open my own center that would be like a healing center, you know. And so what I did is I knew that I was hearing that it takes, you know, maybe 3.5 years for the sex addict, if they really go into treatment and they really work their program, to be able to have a healthy relationship and really recover. And it takes 5 or 6 years for the partner spouse. And so I told myself, I've given enough of my life to this problem, you know.
Right.
I'm not going to wait 5 or 6 years. And so I decided that I was, you know, the kids were gone, he was gone. I could do whatever I wanted to do. I no longer had to think about how any of my decisions were impacting anyone but myself. And so I decided to find a certification program for teaching yoga that really matched my own philosophy for working with people as a therapist. And I found a yoga called Integral Yoga, which is, you know, really focuses on the spiritual path of yoga. It's the physical yoga too, but it has all of the branches. And I put myself in that situation. I went for 30 days to the ashram,
mm.
and I did an intensive training. And it was sort of like taking care of multiple things, because it was going to give me the certification I needed to add that into my practice and what I was doing. But also it was going to put me in a place that was safe and where I could not escape my thoughts,
mm-hmm.
you know. So
mm-hmm.
I couldn't make myself so busy. I couldn't run away from what was happening, because I was going to be doing 3 or 4 hours of yoga a day, physical yoga, and 3 hours of meditation.
Wow, that would have to really ground you and help you to work through your feelings as well
absolutely.
As your thoughts.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so again, I mean, well, I guess this happened before you became certified as a sexual addiction therapist. You started out with
right.
yoga.
Right.
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 And then how else did you heal?
You know, I have wonderful friends. You know, my family was really supportive. I read everything I could read. And then I started getting the try, made the decision to, you know, offer service in this area. So I started getting the training. So all of these things were helpful, because I had no idea. You know, there were certain things I had started doing in that relationship that were totally outside of what I would normally do. I would never read someone's journal. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's such
mm-hmm.
an intrusion in someone's privacy. I wouldn't check up on anyone. You know, I mean, there were things that I was doing because I just wanted to know what was going on, you know.
Right.
And so I would get these books, you know, all of the books out there, Contrary to Love and and, you know, the codependency books and stuff like that. And I thought, I was horrified, you know, I thought, and I was embarrassed because I thought, oh my gosh, here I have all this training. I've been a therapist for all these years, and I'm like the poster child. You know, mm-hmm. I felt like I was the poster child of a spouse partner. It's like, how did this happen? You know, how did I let it happen? So I can be pretty tough on myself. I was not going to give myself any wiggle room.
So then what did you do? Because obviously you had to feel good, I mean, in terms of the fact that you really were kind of cleansing what you had been through and developing
right.
your own sense of self. How
well,
did
what,
you
what
move
I did,
on?
I moved on through forgiveness, you know. I mean, I always felt love and compassion for my spouse. And, you know, in the yoga spiritual practice, you know, when you're meditating, you go through this thing of deep relaxation. And what you do is you learn how to access your spirit or your higher self, you know,
mm-hmm.
your wisdom. And so I was really able to not let myself, not allow my mind to just spin, not let it go crazy. I was able to go, okay. You know, like one time I was meditating in the ashram, and tears just started running down my face. I wasn't sobbing. I was completely still, but tears were coming out. And so I became, you know, my true self, and I said, oh, you know, I'm observing. Wow, you know, you're crying. What are you crying about? And the thought came to my mind, I miss him. And then the voice said, what do you miss? You know, was he there for you spiritually, physically, emotionally, financially? You know, the answer was no to all those things. And so the answer was, I miss being married. You know, I miss that idea of what my life is going to be like and this idea of having a partner. So that was very healing for me because that helped me to not personalize his behavior, you know, and to really assess how I came to be aligned, you know, with someone with those behaviors, you know, and really what I was looking for. You know, I had to be responsible for my part if I didn't want to repeat it again.
Oh, absolutely, and that's something I firmly believe in, is that we have to take 100% responsibility for our own life no matter what happens.
Right.
So then can you share with our listeners some of the tips and skills and techniques that you obviously have incorporated to get healthy and to maintain
mm-hmm.
that health?
Well, yes, I find what's really helpful for me, and I use this with clients, I teach them to do that, is a little bit of what I was talking about, becoming the witness, the observer, because what happens is we let our minds take control, and the mind can be a great thing, and it can just torment you, you know, and especially if you're having what I had and what is so commonly found, you know, you're having traumatic stress syndrome and then post-traumatic stress where you get these images and you can't sleep and all that kind of stuff. It's because your mind is spinning. So I use this with myself and I teach people how to just kind of look at that and calm yourself down. You know, we do body mind tapping, you know,
mm-hmm.
where you don't try to block the feelings. You hit the meridian points with your fingertips and you acknowledge it, you know. So you have to acknowledge what you're feeling. Are you feeling sad or angry or whatever? And start stating it and just let it move through the body instead of blocking it. It brings me a great deal of peace. I'll actually put my hand up even now sometimes something will happen and one of those thoughts will come back in. And it is thought blocking, but it's not blocking your feelings. You know, it's taking charge of your mind and not letting it torment you.
So that technique, that tapping, has allowed yourself to experience your feelings and keep from blocking them. What other support systems do you have available?
You mean for techniques or support
systems?
Yeah,
because now you are certified as a sexual addictions therapist,
right.
As well as you've really branched out and have incorporated a lot of very healthy resources. I mean, nothing is better for anybody than meditation and
right.
yoga, and, you know, obviously you have a strong spiritual life, so you've been able to incorporate that all.
Right. Well, I think it's all important, and I think that, you know, even looking at your physical exercise, your body, your nutrition, you know, we begin to think that there's something wrong with our bodies, you know, because we're having problems in this area. And so you have to really, you have to love your body again, you know, you have to take care of it, give yourself what you need so that you're healthy. So I did all of that. You know, I had certain health problems starting to come out from the stress. And as soon as, you know, I really try to see what they are. And I do that with people coming in, for example, with depression, you know, and I tell them, have you had a good exam? You know, have you had blood tests? Do you know that all everything that you need with your hormones, you know, and your blood sugar is on track? Because if it isn't, you know, it adds to that depression, or it can create the depression. So, you know, I try to look at all of the different areas, the physical body, the emotional, the mental. You know, the mental is, and this is also a yoga practice. They call them by Sanskrit names, but basically they're saying balance the physical, the spiritual, the mental, you know, nutritional. You have to balance all of it out. I think it's very healing to do service. It helps me to help other people, you know, because I can say, yeah, I don't say this, but I can say I can really know what they're going through. I know what it's like to be in that seat where you've just discovered these things, and I know what it's like for the person with a sex addiction, the remorse and the guilt and the shame that they feel. You know, I mean, they've spent a huge amount of time trying to cover this secret, and it's very difficult when it comes out.
Oh, I can imagine. Now, will you tell us the difference between non-attachment and detachment? Because certainly in the 12-step world, there is a lot of emphasis on detaching with love.
Right.
So you have a yogic art of non-attachment. And what does that involve?
Non-attachment is more about, it's also done with love, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But detachment, when people hear that, sometimes they think that means you don't care, you know, you're just detached, you know. I mean, we actually use it. Like I could have said in my marriage, what was one of the problems? Well, my husband just seemed so detached, you know. So there's a certain meaning we give to that word. In non-attachment, what it means is that we're going to live in the present moment, we're going to do the best that we can in that moment, and we're not attached to the outcome. So I'm going to, you know, walk this path today, for example, you know, with my husband who's come back from treatment, but I'm not going to be attached to the outcome. And so it's loving to yourself and it's loving to them, because you're not placing your expectations on them. You're acknowledging, you know, you're on your own journey. You know, we're in this together, but I have my journey, you have your journey. The only thing we can do is our work. I can't do your work. You can't do my work. So is that clear? Did I make it more
clear? Yeah, that absolutely is clear.
Okay.
I'm curious, did he ever re-enter your life, or to your knowledge, has he ever really fully explored and maintained recovery?
Well, see, because he moved out of state, you know, I'm gonna guess maybe not, because of things that I've heard. I mean, I still have contact with his mother every now and then. I love her dearly, you know. Some of his cousins and things, kind of like Facebook, not anything very often, but just a thread of communication. But you know, I think that he regrets walking out. I had one conversation with him. It was I tried, because we have children and stuff, to keep a peaceful, friendly relationship between us. But it was kind of an odd thing, because it was sort of like I should have been the angry one, but he was like angry, you know. So it was really kind of an odd twist. But I just finally had to let go, because I didn't pursue it like diligently. I mean, we never did like text each other every day and things like that. But I would send an email. But, you know, I could tell, like, he sent an email Christmas card to me, and it was on the addresses. It was just like he forwarded it to a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
There was the name of one of the women that he cheated on me with. And so I saw that, and I got angry, and I just emailed him, and I said, please remove me from your list. You know, I don't need... I found that, and I don't know if other people have found this to be true. I mostly work with people in the early stages, you know. So what I found is even after we got divorced, we were broken up, it was almost like clockwork. Every 6 months, something would happen that would put it, it would hit me in the face with it again. You know, it wouldn't be any, it would just like come to me, you know, like the Christmas card or, you know, he had a doctor's appointment. He had come out because he had had an accident. He was on disability. He had to go to the same doctor. So for a while, every so often, he would come out. We didn't have any contact. But a neighbor said, oh, you know, do you and your husband ever talk to each other? And I said, no, unfortunately, we don't really communicate. Oh, well, I thought maybe you had seen each other because I saw him, you know. He was in a car with this, you know, blue Mustang. And it was like, oh, you know. So it was like that was someone else that he had cheated on me with, you know. And so it was like no matter what I did, I had to face it all the time.
Oh, yeah. So, and, you know, I almost say those are reminders that you've done the right thing, you know.
Well, that's a good point, yeah.
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 So now, obviously, you have a website called 52 Weeks of Peace Healing Center, and that is www.52weeksofpeace.com. And what is that website about?
Well, that's the name of my practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a 52 weeks of peace means peace all the time because 52 weeks in a year, so it's just, you know, year after year was my idea behind it, behind the name. But it's just a place for people to come and find their peace, learn some tools. Some people only come for the yoga, but it's
mm-hmm.
a traditional yoga, so they learn how to relax, they learn how to, you know, meditate, and they get their body healthy and everything. Other people come just for the counseling, and then sometimes they'll do both, you know. But it's also a place where I have like a huge, a pretty good-sized library. It's a small retail store, and it's all about conscious living. So it's about living in the present moment, not causing harm. You know, so the products are natural, they're organic. There's a lot of self-help books. It's non-denominational, you know, so there's important books, like I try to, anytime something comes in of a different religion or whatever, I'll put it on the shelf, you know, so that people feel, you know, they truly understand that yoga is not a religion, it's a path, it's a spiritual path, you know. So that's what it is. It's dedicated to just making everything accessible so that if you want something, you have a place to go to try to get it.
And you actually have produced and written and sang some music that has been
right.
healing for you.
Right.
And can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I know that's available on Amazon and iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been a singer all my life,
mm-hmm.
since early childhood. And I started composing, playing guitar at 13 and composing when I was in college. And so in between therapy, there was a 7-year sabbatical that I just did music. And I recorded some albums, and I traveled to Japan several times and did concerts for the World Peace Movement and everything. So for me, music is a way, going back to what are the techniques and tools, music has always been an emotional release for me from early childhood. I could always find a song that said that would describe how I was feeling, and then I learned how to write the songs and share them, you know, with other people, because I really feel that whatever I'm going through, many other people are going through too. I don't think I'm, you know, unique in any, you know, certain way. It's like if I've made this mistake or I've had this situation, someone else has too. So the music has always been healing for me, and the purpose of it is to be healing for other people. I started writing songs because, you know, of this relationship that I was in. I couldn't communicate. I didn't feel that I could do much about it. So I started trying to describe it, and then it started turning into, you know, a CD. So I have a CD, and it's called This Thing Called Love, and it's 16 songs. And they're just all the different stages that you go through when you're in a relationship, when you're trying to love and figure out what love is all about and everything. I mean, it's not only for people who have been spouse partners or sex addicts. It's for just people who've, like, suffered through infidelity,
right,
or seen their relationship fall apart, you know. The
mm-hmm.
first song on there is called Married Singles. And that's a term that they use in a marriage recovery program called Retrovi. And they say what happens is people get distant, and then they begin living a single life even though they're married. You know, they each have their own life. And it really struck me, and so I wrote a song called Married Singles, you know. There's a song, there's some spiritual songs, because for me the recovery is all about communicating and really finding that center in yourself. I just don't know how else I would have done it if I didn't go that route. But the nice thing is that they're getting radio play. About seven of them, I guess, have been played on internet radio, Women of Substance Radio, and two of them have made the top 10. And some of them are funny, you know. Like one of them is called "Not Too Smart with My Heart."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it made the top 10 2 months in a row. You know?
So if people want to hear these songs, what do they need to do?
Well, they could Google my name. I mean, it'd be as simple as just Googling my name. Or they can go to Amazon Music or iTunes and put in my name, Shireen Torres. Shireen Torres. Or even simpler, they can go to my music website, which is musicbyshireen.com.
Okay, and that's how they can pick up This Thing Called Love. Is there a way to listen to it beforehand?
Yes. On my website you can listen, and also if they go, it's amazing how technology gets grabbed you. It's like all marketed through social media now, so now I've got multiple areas. But they can listen to it, I think, on CD Baby.
Uh-huh.
CD Baby is a website for independent artists without a label.
Uh-huh.
And so the first thing I did when I released it, because I have two other CDs, is I put all my things on CD Baby. So on my website they can hear some of them. I don't have all of them because I have over 60 songs, but I have some of them on there. And then if they want to hear other clips, they can go to CD Baby and they play a little bit of it.
Very good. Well, Shireen Torres, I'm telling you, you've got a lot of spiritual gifts between your yoga and your being certified and your music. And I would encourage anybody to check out your website. Again, that is www.52weeksapeace.com or www.musicbyshireen.com. And that is Sharreen. Thank you so much for
being
a guest on the show. You've dealt with it from all perspectives, and you've got a world of knowledge. So thanks again.
Oh, thank you, Carol, for inviting me.
All right. You take care.
Okay. Thanks. You too.
All right. Well, we are now going to end the show. Obviously, that's a woman who has a lot to offer, and she does a beautiful job. So fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. We'll see you next week. And thanks for sharing. Thanks for caring. And thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.